All right, good evening, everyone. Tonight, continuing along, I want to do two more categories, two more concepts in Muksa. One of them, which we will complete, is a short one. Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis is number 7 on the top of page 7. And then we will move on to 8, which is Alachas of Balsas. And we will begin that tonight. There's more to do. Still in Mirtz Hashem. It will not be not next week. Next week will be the second night of Chanukah, Mirtz Hashem Wednesday. So Rabbi Krenzke and I will both be giving Chanukah classes. Same time slots, same Wednesday night form. We'll just be putting a pause on our usual material and we'll be talking about Chanukah. So it'll be in 2 weeks, Mirtz Hashem. It will probably be the last one we'll have on Muksa. We'll just summarize and conclude with some odds and ends. While I'm just announcing classes, this Motzei Shabbos, also on behalf of Bina, I'm just going to mention, as I'm sure you all already know, that Matas will be giving a class here Saturday night, Motzei Shabbos, 9 p.m. for women, on the topic of finding faith in a faithless world. It's a Bina event. I believe there's a charge, $18, and I think it's a there's food, Malavalka. Let it be known. Okay. All right, moving forward. So tonight we're talking about Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis. So last week we've completed our discussions. In previous weeks we've spoken about Muksa Machmas Iser, Klisha Malachto Iser, those utensils which are primarily used for forbidden activities. Those are the utensils in which Chazal placed a Muksa category on because of the fact that generally you come to use them for prohibited things, so they were considered Muksa. But those types of utensils are allowed to be moved for their permitted usages. A classic example we've discussed many times, you have a hammer, which is primarily used for building, therefore it's considered muksa, but if you need it to crack open a coconut, you're allowed to move it. The other major, major leniency in that category of a kli shemalachto le'iser was if you need its place also. You're allowed to move any kli shemalachto le'iser if you need to place that at the end. So if the hammer's on your chair, you can move the hammer. I need the chair. If the hammer's in your bookshelf and you need the book behind it, you're allowed to move the hammer. That was a discussion that we had last week of klisha. We've had it for 2 weeks already, of a klisha malachto le'iser. Last week we discussed graf shel re'i, things which are inappropriate, foul-smelling, mess up your house, in which we do not have a concept of muksa, you're allowed to move those. As well, so far we've discussed muksa machmas gufa, those things which are inherently also. So those two things are inherently prohibited muksa, in which you have no purpose for that. So tonight's category, number 7 on the top of page 7, is muksa machmas chisaron kis. That which is muksa, machmas means because of, and chisaron kis means a financial loss. Those things which are considered muksa because of fear of a financial loss. Now again, remembering what the primary translation of muksa is, muksa means set aside. I've designated it that I do not want to use it. I have not prepared it for use on Shabbos. Everything about Shabbos is preparing things for use, from the food to our clothing to our houses to the items we're going to use. So certain things are set aside, not because their primary use is forbidden, like a hammer, a pen, and the like, or a cell phone, or all those other kinds of things. But the primary reason why you set it aside in your mind is because you would not use it because you're fearful of financial loss. All right. This is a brief one, a couple of rules, then we'll talk about some applications, many of which are very, very, very practical, every week situations. Okay, A, what's the guideline for a classification in this? Well, number one is where the owner withholds the item for fear of monetary loss, as I have mentioned. How do we know whether or not this is an item which an owner would be considered to have withheld because of a fear of a financial loss? So number one is if it's expensive. If it's expensive, so that's the first thing. Expensive things you don't use for purposes other than what it is bought for. That's the kind of things you say to your children, don't touch that, that's for this. It's the kind of things you yourself don't use if it's not for the intended purpose because it's an expensive item and you're careful with it. That's the first easy thing. Now it doesn't have to be expensive, it just has to be something which is important and you don't want to lose and you don't want to get ruined. For example, important papers. So when you're on the phone in the kitchen and someone gives you a phone number, so you say, hold on 1 second. So you're scrounging around the kitchen looking for a piece of paper to write the phone number on. So we all know there are certain pieces of paper that you write phone numbers on, and then there are pieces of paper that you don't. If you just bought a car and you have your statement, your deed on the counter, you don't write someone's phone number because that's an important, I don't want to get ruined, this is important. It has a lot of value behind that, and therefore you ostensibly would take care of something like that. So it doesn't have to be inherently valuable, it just has to be something that you would not give to your kids to draw with. You would not give to yourself to edify. It's important. You put it aside. It has a special place that you keep it, and therefore you would not use it for other things, not just on Shabbos. You just wouldn't use it for other items. Now, one other determinant factor is in I-2, I don't know how you say that, number letter 2, whatever that would be. If it has a designated place, then that is a litmus test that you know that's considered important. Now, it doesn't have to have a designated place to be considered important. But if it does, if everybody in the house knows this gets put away there, that's where it's kept, the reason why you do that is because it's valuable to you and everybody needs to know where it is and it shouldn't get misplaced and it shouldn't get ruined while it's not in its appropriate place. That is a factor that if you have something like that, well, then you know you're talking about something that you're careful with because you're afraid of it getting ruined. So those are just some guidelines for determining what would be considered. Now this, I can't give you too many specific examples. We'll get to a bunch in a few minutes. But it depends. And it depends on whether or not the item at hand is something that you would or would not have a specific place for, something which you would or would not use for any other alternative purpose other than why you bought it, and how valuable it is to you. But something which is in that category, and again, we'll talk about some more crystallized examples in a moment, has this category of muksa called muksa machmas kisarun kesei muksa, put set aside from your mind for fear of a financial loss. Now, continuing in terms of what would help us determine what it is, has to be something that would not be used on Shabbos. And I put would not in quotes, because to distinguish it from that which could not be used on Shabbos. Something which could not be used on Shabbos means that it's forbidden for you to use it on Shabbos. That's not necessarily this category. This is a category where you just, I wouldn't use it. I could, technically, I mean there's a use for it, but I wouldn't. Meaning, for example, I wrote it all out here, we could read it together. Expensive crystal, for example. So everybody knows your expensive crystal has a specific place in your house where you keep it. You don't just leave that around. You don't leave it on the table when you're done using it, like some of your other glasses, which might not get be put away for a day or 2 days or 3 days. When you have that, you take care of it. However, if the occasion calls for it, you would use it on Shabbos. Even though it's valuable and it's protected, but you would use it on Shabbos. If your child got engaged on Shabbos, you would take them out. Or if you just didn't have any other cups, you would take it out. Why not? So therefore, even though it's within the category of what we would call special and designated, that doesn't make it muksa. It has a permitted use, and you would use it on Shabbos. I use that to distinguish a shochet's knife. Someone has a knife that they use for shechita. Now, it's obviously not a very practical or common example, but just for the purpose of explaining what we're talking about over here, you can use your shochet knife at lunch on Shabbos. You could take that knife out and you could cut your meat with it. It's a knife, it works. It might not be very utilitarian, but it could work. But you would never do that. Why would you never use this knife, even though it has a permitted function on Shabbos? Because if you have a shochet knife, you know what it takes to keep it sharp. You know what it takes to make sure that for a slaughter that it's done correctly. You would never use that to cut your chicken on Shabbos afternoon. So therefore, it's set aside and designated from your mind as something which is not going to be used on Shabbos, even though it could be used on Shabbos, meaning it has a permitted usage, but you would never do it. So when Shabbos starts, this knife is entirely set aside in your mind as something which is not going to be used. Even though it has a permitted function, you would not use that permitted function. Therefore, it's considered muksa machmas chisaron kes. That's the principle. Let's take that into a real-life example. A camera. All of you probably have more than one camera in your house. And if you don't, if you think about it, you probably do because you have the little cheapo ones that you bought at Target for $1.99 that's disposable. You use it once. Up to your fancier cameras, up to your really fancy cameras if you are of that ilk that you like to have those types of cameras. Now, within that range of cameras, some of them, I can't find the camera. Where's the camera? Right, you ever have an experiment? Where's the camera? Because who knows where it is? You left it over here, you took it over there. It's like one of those cameras that didn't cost all that much, and it ends up everywhere. And you don't have that sense of, don't touch that. And then you have the camera that everybody knows. You need the camera, it's in its case, under the bed, under the closet, that's where it is. That's the kind of camera it is. So, now, camera is a great example because even before we get into this category called Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kes, what's a camera anyway? It's a Klisha Malach Tola Yisar. It's the other category that we've been discussing. Its primary use is forbidden on Shabbos. So before we even get into our discussion, a camera already is muksa. We don't need to get into that. It's already going to start as muksa. But what category is a camera going to start as? It's for sure going to start on the lower level category of a Klisha Malach Tola Yisar, a utensil whose primary purpose is to take pictures, which you can't do on Shabbos. Now, if we would just stop there, then if you found your camera, you forgot to move the camera and ended up on the Shabbos table Friday night, I told you to move the camera, I was going to, I forgot. Here's your camera on your table Friday night, it's right in front of the setting. Well, if you need the place where the camera is sitting, and it's classified as a kli, shemalachto le'is, or a utensil whose primary use is prohibited, what can you do? Pick it up and move it. I need the place that the camera is in. It's on this farm shelf, and I need the safer behind it. What classification should I work through? What's the camera? Its primary use is something which is prohibited. You could use it as a paperweight, but its primary use is prohibited. But I need its place. I need it. It's in my way. So you're allowed to pick it up and move it. That's totally fine. But now we need to think, okay, before I move the camera, what kind of camera do I have over here? Is this the kind of camera that if I'm working in the kitchen and there's a fan on and things are blowing away, so I'm working, I would just take the camera and put it down on top of my page. I would do that because it's a nice paperweight. It's on the counter. It's not a big deal. It's a kind of, it's a camera. It's a camera. But it's not that expensive. Well, if you would do that with your camera, then that camera doesn't become classified as something which is set aside because of the fear of financial loss. You use this camera for other things. You would use it as a paperweight if that was a, that's what was on the counter as the fan was blowing or the window was open. So you take the camera and you pull down your pieces of paper. But if you have one of those cameras, you would never use it as a paperweight. This is a camera that has its special case and carrying. You put it away. It's an expensive camera. It's a $500-$600 camera. You would never do that. Well, that camera then gets bumped up to the higher level of muksa. It's no longer only muksa because its primary use is as a prohibited utensil, which has the leniencies of tzarech gufo mekomo, if you need it or you need its place. It now has the status of muksa machmas tisar and kis. You would not move this camera or use it because its permitted usages, what are the permitted usages of a camera? Paperweight, the doorstop, whatever. You would never do that with this kind of camera. So then it gets bumped up a level, and if that camera is on a chair, then that doesn't help. You can't pick up the chair. You can't pick up the camera because you need its chair. That's not the type of muksa we're talking about. That's only related to the lower level muksa of kli shemalach talis, or that type of camera becomes more muksa and could not just be picked up because you need its place, because that we don't have that leniency on this category of chisar and kis. Is that clear? No.
If it's real expensive, you can't move it?
Right, because it's now in a higher level category of muksa. The only time the leniency of moving it when you need its place is if it's in the category of a kli shemalach tola isra, a utensil whose primary purpose is forbidden. But a expensive camera has this new level of muksa, of chisarun kis, of a fearful of a financial loss, and therefore doesn't carry that leniency. Okay, we're going to tell you, you need to use your elbows, but we're talking about not having to deal with muksa at all. In the cheaper version of the camera, you could just pick it up and move it if it's on your chair. I need it. I need the place. It's in. Oh, that's the last thing. IV. What's the right way to say that? Four? Just go with four? In letter four, only the owner determines the status of what it is. We'll get to this again later. Not Rav Moshe Paskin. You can't give a specific example because I'm giving examples of like real cheapy camera, middle of the road camera, and expensive camera. But that's because I made that up. You might have said, hey, listen, that $199 camera from Target, that's my camera. I don't let anyone touch that camera. Okay, then you've just made it into something which is special. And someone who has got a $600 camera is thinking, you know what, I need to buy another one next week. You know, my kids want to play with it. This is, as far as I'm concerned, I've had this camera for 3 years. It's a piece of junk. I'm getting a new one next week for Hanukkah. He has just made a $600 camera into a kli shemalach tolis, or because in his mind, the owner of the item determines the status of what it is. You own it. How do you use it? So I'm giving you the principles and trying to pick an example of a camera because there's such a wide range of cameras in terms of its value. And then each individual camera owner, based on how they use their camera, will determine whether or not it has the higher level muksa or only the level of kli shemalach talis. Let me just finish this off. But I just want to stress again, in Hilchos Muksa, things can be in several categories at the same time. So a camera is a great example where even before we start, it's for sure going to be muksa as a kli shemalach talis. The only discussion in the camera is whether or not we bump it up to the higher level, some other fancy types of knives, not even a shoe, but a fancy knife, it might be only because of the Malachim's Chisaron Kiss that it becomes Mokzeh, because there's no, it's inherently fine, but you say, I only use this knife for this, and that, I would never use it on Shabbos for whatever other purpose would be out there. So, but if that's how, that's where, let me just go first here, yeah? It fits into just the concept of, since you didn't prepare it, you didn't designate it, so therefore it's not ready for Shabbos. So as far as which specific category would we say, I don't know.
The cheap camera isn't ready either.
That's what I'm saying. The cheap camera is mukhsa because it's a klisha malach
tol eser. Why is there a difference? To me, they seem equal.
Well, that's the question as to why were the sages lenient on the category of klisha malach tol eser, and that is because it's not inherently mukhsa. In other words, a camera has a use as a paperweight. I can use this on Shabbos, and I would use it on Shabbos if I needed it. So the sages said, because its primary use is for something forbidden, don't do that. I can use my hammer for permitted stuff. I can use the crack open. Yeah, but primarily when you get to, when you hold a hammer and you see a nail, you're gonna. So they said, but it's only because of that fear that they said they made it muksa. But these items are inherently, I have no intention of using them on Shabbos. Before the sages came in, I've taken it out of my mind, so it doesn't have that leniency. Correct. Right. Now, so if you have a hammer, let me go over again and again and again because it's so confusing. If you have a hammer on the table, but it's not in the way. No, you're only having four people at your table for Shabbos, and so you sit at one head and two sides, and the hammer's on the other side. You have no permissibility, no heter to move it because it's not Shabbos dick. Because the a camera is muksa, it's a klisha malach tol iser. What's the permitted way to use a camera? I need it, because I need a paperweight, or I need its place. Well, if you don't need anything, you just are saying, that's not Shabbos stick, that's muksa. You know how to move the camera, and you'll sit with the hammer on the Shabbos table, and you'll teach everybody about the laws of muksa, and you'll say it's a kavod to Shabbos to have the hammer on my table, because that's what the halacha of Shabbos says, that it's muksa. And so it's a kavod Shabbos to have it. So you know, that's what, so the, it is muksa, but you're allowed to move it if you need its place or if you need it. But if the camera that's there is so expensive that you wouldn't use it as a paperweight, then you can't even move it if it's in the way of a setting.
Extension of that, one of my daughters is a seamstress. She has scissors, but she'll only use
a claw. Get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Get to that in a minute. Yeah.
So there's the status that of its own point that status can change.
Yes. 100%.
The first year is brand new, it's not supposed to get the second year already, it's paper right
now. 100%, exactly. That was an example that I wanted to give of the $600 camera. When that camera was bought, I don't care how rich the person is, that's a special camera. It's only as it moves along, and it falls once or twice, and it gets a nick, and then I'm buying a new one, then as you, it loses that status, and you don't have to. But the owner determines how these, and that could definitely change, 100%.
I just want to establish something in my own mind. Let's say there's a very expensive crystal figurine. It's sitting on a table. Somebody stops by, not expected on Shabbos, small children. What do we do?
So
you can't move it.
So that's not prohibited because it's a utensil that's there for beautifying purposes, but it's not a it's a utensil. It has the shame of a kli. It's not a rock. It's a figurine of sorts. It's what we would call a klisha malach tol heter. It's a utensil of permitted usage. There's nothing forbidden about it. Don't move it. Muksa has to be one of the categories of something prohibited. It either has to be formless and useless, which this is not. It has to be a prohibited utensil, or it has to be set aside from your mind because it's so expensive. If that figurine is so delicate that you never, then it might become worse as far as trying to protect it because of that status. That would be an interesting, if you had such a figurine, yeah, I'd be tempted to say that, but that's not, I think that's in the proof in itself. A figurine like that is not left in kids' reach. It's not.
Well, you have kids only have a child and you anticipate it.
Maybe. It could be. That might be a problem. If you had such a thing that's so expensive that as soon as the kids walk in, you know you're thinking, I've got to get this out of the way.
Thank you for that, and also anguish for the person who owns the thing.
So, and you wouldn't use it for anything else because it's so valuable. That might become. You might not be able to move that on Shabbat. I'd have to look that up. That I would hear that might be a problem. But okay, I don't know.
Then you have to block here with some chairs or something. The kids can't get.
Yeah. Okay, is there another question somewhere?
Yes, can you use a hammer and table that you don't need the space for as an embarrassing thing to get to move it? Like, let's say you have like a whole family over and there's a big fat hammer and you've got
the table. We're going to use graph shoulder E. I don't know that works. That doesn't sound right. And the way that he described it was it's a clutter. You're right that you're embarrassed that it's there.
Or a camera, you're having this big rubber.
Maybe. You're funny coming with an interesting example. Now, the halacha by Graf Shalrid that we learned about last week is where either it smells bad or it's so cluttered that it's embarrassing. So what happens if you have one item, but it's embarrassing? So it's an interesting question. I like that question. I don't know. I'm tempted to say no, but that doesn't mean anything that I'm tempted to say no. Let me look that up and ask around about that. That's a very interesting question. You're having a big shell show this at your house, and there's a camera sitting on the table. Like, you got to get out of the way. But say the same thing. It's over here.
Also, not financial loss, but sentimental loss to valuable.
Yeah, same thing. No, that would create the same. But it doesn't matter why it's valuable to you, but whatever reason that you would not use it for any other purpose other than what it's designated for, can you use it? What are you talking? Like, what kind of thing are you talking about?
Something I have something
for
my mother. It's valuable to me, but when the kids have to pick up a ball.
No, but saying, is it muksa to begin with?
It's just a statue on a.
Right, and it's not muksa. Why is that muksa? It doesn't fit under the category. It's like the cut flowers that we spoke about last week. So they ask parents the same thing. Because I have this assumption that everything. I go into showers with the assumption that everything is muksa. It's not true. They're not everything. So why should cut flowers be muksa? What's wrong with them? They're not doing anything. So you can move them. So why would the cut flowers in the vase in your kitchen on your table be any different than your statue? Unless you made it into something that's so valuable you would never use it for anything else, then it might enter into this category of a muksa machmas chisaron kiss. All right, let's do some applications. Let's go through some of the applications and see if that helps some of the descriptions here. Alright, number one is not really very relevant, but I put it in there anyway. You know, your scalpel, your shochet knives, your things that are so valuable, just to help get the idea across. The things that would not be used for anything other than its purpose, even though technically speaking, it has permitted usages. I could use any of these things for other purposes. I could use them to cut things, but I wouldn't, because I need them to remain in their pristine condition. And since I would not use these things, they are therefore designated as muksa machmas chisaron kiss and put aside. Now, B, merchandise to be sold. That means you are the owner of a store, whether in your home or an actual business, and you sell stuff. The stuff that you sell, you would not use on Shabbos. Well, there are two ways to say this. Let's break it down into two possibilities. If the owner would normally not take from his stock to use, again, we're not talking about taking to keep. We're talking about using and then putting back on your shelves to sell, which is the general situation when you sell stuff. You don't use it. But if in that circumstance, where you're selling goods out of your home or you have a business, and you would not take from your stock because you're afraid you're going to ruin it. Once you take it off your shelves and you use it, you know, you can't put it back on the shelf to sell. So therefore, you would set it aside in your mind as something that you're not going to use. And therefore, it becomes mutz, and you cannot move that or use that on Shabbos. Now that's very relevant for those kind of, you have a tablecloth that you sell out of your home, or you sell dishes, or whatever the tchotchkes that you might sell out of your home, and have a big business out of your home, or out of your store. If it's in your store, it's not going to be such a problem, because if you actually brought it home, then you've already probably changed its status beforehand. But those kinds of products, generally would be considered muksa because of this, because people don't usually use things that they're still intending to sell, because you need to make sure that it's in a pristine condition, when you sell it. If it's the kind of thing that you normally would use or permit your friends to borrow, so then that item is not muksa. I don't have a specific example in mind of things that are sold that you would do such a thing with, but there is such a thing. And I will mention that this never applies to edible food. Edible food is one of the exceptions which we had, which no matter what, is never muksa. If it's edible on Shabbos, it's not muksa. So if you own a store that sells food, or you're planning on selling this food, or returning this food, food in your house is not muksa. If you need it on Shabbos, it's fine. Now, I say that for the next example and see if purchases to be returned. You have the same issue. When you have something in your house that you're planning on returning, that is muksa. Relevant to those of us who have piles of stuff at the front door waiting to someone to remember to take out to the car to go to the store, and you can only remember at the same time that you're going in that direction to put in your car as opposed to... But that pile there is muksa, because you would never use it. It's therefore set aside in your mind as something which I'm not planning on using. And if you just want to straighten up your house, that is a muksa pile. Make sure you take care of that before Shabbos, because all of those items waiting to be returned, even though they're usable, but you're not planning on using it, and you've so much so not planned on using it, you would not wear it, because if you wore it, you couldn't return it. That therefore is muksa. Make sure you put those things away before Shabbos. Similarly, from some examples we brought earlier, all those important papers, contracts, receipts, your driver's license, your registration things, those are very important papers. You will not use them for anything other than what they are there for. And since you don't need them on Shabbos, and you wouldn't use it for anything else, it's very important. Even though it's not inherently valuable, it doesn't have the status of a $700 camera, but it has the same halachic status of something which is extremely important to you, valuable, and will never be used for anything other than its designated purpose. Therefore, you couldn't straighten up and put those things away. Also, all of those things take on a status of muksa, and that will be important when we talk about the laws of a bus. It's also in a few minutes. Those things, if they're in your pocket, in your wallet, in your pocketbook, have a status of muksa, because those papers have that status, and that will possibly affect the whole bag around it. But we'll get to that anyway. But just foreshadowing that those items are inherently in this category of muksa, machmas, kisar, and kis. E, your tools of trade, which you were mentioning, Mrs. Robinson, previously. You have a sewing knife or a sewing needle or a sewing whatever, scissors, that is special. I don't use this for anything other than the trade that I have. So even though scissors technically is a great example, scissors we discussed. Before Shabbos starts, now you're fine, you walk home from shul, you lit candles, and there's a pair of scissors on the table. What's the status of the pair of scissors? It's muksa. Why is it muksa? Klisha malachta list, or the primary purpose of scissors is something which is prohibited on Shabbos. Tearing, ripping, something you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. But there are permitted uses on Shabbos, namely opening food, opening lettuce, cutting lettuce, cutting food, whatever. You can do lots of things with scissors. You might not normally cut your chicken with a pair of scissors. You could, and you can cut open food. There are ways to use a pair of scissors in a permissible way on Shabbos. So it's a cliche, but its primary use is forbidden. So if a pair of scissors was on a table in the corner where it didn't bother you, so it's muksa, you can't move it. But if it's in the way, or if you need the scissors to open something, and remember, you're allowed to create reasons. This is relevant also to your question about the hammer on the table, and it's embarrassing. You're allowed to create situations that you need it. So I happen to need a bag of potato chips, and there's a pair of scissors, and it's shalosh shudis. Hey, why don't you open up the bag of potato chips with that scissors, and now you're fine. Take the scissors, open up your bag of potato chips, which you're allowed to do, and then you can... Now you can't do that if there's a knife sitting right next to you, but if you don't have anything available in the room, then you're allowed to create those reasons. But that's what the status of the scissors would be regularly. But if it's a pair of scissors that is a sewing pair of scissors, that everybody knows you're not allowed to use those scissors to cut open the string on the box of cookies, you have to get the scissors out of the cabinet, that pair of scissors becomes more stringent. That's now a pair of scissors which is set aside, machmas, chisar, and kis, this new level of muksa, so that even if it's in the place setting, it's in the way of what you need, you still can't move it because it has a higher level of muksa, and you'll have to come out to some, you moving it with your elbows or your toes or something, which we'll talk about in 2 weeks. Merit Sasha.
What about a stethoscope?
A stethoscope. What would you let anybody touch it or play with it other than yourself?
No, but if someone came over and didn't
use it. Right, so that is an example of, let's work that through. So, first of all, is it prohibited? Is it muksa at all on Shabbos? What, it just magnifies sound? I'm assuming what that would be. It at worst, it would be a klisha malachta list. Let's say it is a klisha malachta list. So then if you needed it, that would be okay. The only question would be if it becomes a muksa machmas chisar and kis. But I don't think so, because the reason why the shechita knife is set aside is because you can't shecht on Shabbos. So since I can't use it for its primary thing, so I would imagine that would be like the crystal glass. So crystal glass is something which is expensive and set aside but I can use it on Shabbos if I need it. So I would imagine it would be like that, and it should be fine. Right. That's why you're saying moving it not when you need it, even if you don't need it. Yeah, I would think it should be fine. You put it all together, it should be okay. My understanding of it. Okay, last one, and this is the most important application of this entire discussion of Klisha Malachta of Mukta Machmas Chisar and Kes. Appliances and electronics, all of the stuff which is always the things which are left around, they're on the beds, they're on the pillows, they're on the couch, they're left over all over the house. What do we do with them? So, here we have this is the rule. Again, just as examples, your flashlights, your camera, your cell phone, your iPod, all of these electronic games that kids have and we have are all muksa, but they all start off at what level muksa? Klisha Malachta Lisser. Their primary use is all prohibited because they're all electronics, so you can't use them on Shabbos. Again, your cell phone and your flashlight, your camera, your iPod, all of those gadgets are muksa. But what level of muksa are they? And here's where the owner determines the status, and you cannot, or Moshe writes, he cannot give you a list because it constantly changes with technology. When the cell phones first came out, boy, did we treat cell phones with a lot of kavod. And we were careful, and we had social... And you know what? After a couple of years, you know, we can get a replacement for a couple of bucks. You know, it's just not the same anymore. My kids all run around with my cell phones during the day, and it's left over here. I forgot where I put it. It's over there. It just doesn't have that status. And I'm sure as everything comes out, it has that same thing. And different people are not like that. Some people, you know, as the new phones come out and they do more and more things, so each one, when they come out, for a while, they're very delicate and special. And then it gets old. And if you ever clean out your house and you find the cell phone that you had from 4 years ago, you're like, look at it, you're like, pick it up with two hands. I can't believe that I used to use this. But that's how things change so fast. So all of these items around the house, you need to stop and say, okay, what's the deal with this item? How do I use it? Again, they start off as muksa. All of these electronic items are going to start off as muksa. So just to clean up the house after you light candles, you can't do because they're all muksa. So the question is, well, if I need its place or if I need it, can I move it? Or am I stuck because it has that higher level? Well, take each example. My cell phone. How do I use my cell phone? Does it get thrown around a little bit? Would I use it as a paperweight in the kitchen? If I'm on the phone and I'm cooking for Shabbos and there's a breeze in the kitchen, would I put my cell phone down to hold down the papers on the counter while I'm cooking? I think most people today would. They're not so careful with their cell phone that they wouldn't use it as a paperweight on the cabinet. They would. So therefore, what status would your cell phone have? Only the status of muksa of a klisha malachta le'isser. So that if you left your cell phone somewhere and you needed the place where it is now currently lying, you can move it. Again, if you need the place where it's lying, because the cell phone does not get bumped up to that higher level because it doesn't have that status. If you get your kid a new iPod, you get yourself a new iPod, and you're still careful with it, then it might have a higher status. And if you're not careful with it, then what? It's all dependent on how you deal with it, how you treat it, how your family treats it. That is the status of all of these electronics. And this is, you know, every day, every Shabbos you have, the things which were supposed to have been put away before Shabbos and were left out, what is it, how can you move it? And that's what it will determine. And again, in these issues, it all starts off as muksa, and the only question is what level will we deal with it? Yeah?
Question on the scissors. We don't have to use scissors because they're always in there's muksa, but you said another thing is to open up food with it. But let's say it's like a separate catch, it's just writing on it. Would that be a problem?
Oh, that's separate. Okay, yeah, thank you for clarifying. When I talk about opening up your bag of potato chips, you always have to be concerned with ripping the lettering. But the question is, you'll have to open up a bag of potato chips. You need to slice it open as opposed to opening it up from the top. There's a whole separate issue which we'll get to as we move along in Hilchos Shabbos. Now you've just created a utensil which you can hold. We usually don't use it that way, but if you open up a bag from the top of the seams, so now you have a kli that works very well for storage, or you could put water in there, you could do anything you want with that. So you need to sort of destroy the bag as you're opening up in a way that you couldn't do that. So sometimes scissors would actually be a little bit more valuable. These using the sharp edge to get through the lettering to be able to open it in a way where it works on Shabbos. But you do have to make sure that you're not ripping up the letters. Yeah, 100%.
The design, does it matter?
A design is considered writing, like to write a design or create a design. I don't know. I guess normally it might be a problem. I'm not positive. I would imagine that might be a problem depending on how exactly you're destroying it. I'm not sure though. I don't know. I'm focused on books right now. To check that out. It should be a problem. It's because usually whatever you can't do, you can't undo. Since you can't make a design, you shouldn't be able to undo a design. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. You can have a valuable thing which does not have a designated place, but if it does, then that's the get giveaway. This is considered something valuable. Right.
So if you have a cell phone on the sofa, and someone might be sitting on the sofa later, but not just in
the No, because you don't need a place right now.
Guests are coming, you have to wait till they all sit down and move it?
You have to wait until you consider you need their place. In other words, you don't need its place, you know, an hour before they come. You don't. So, yeah, it's not really a game. I can move it when I need its place. So when they come to sit down and you say, I don't have enough seats, you're allowed to move it. But that really is what the heter is. Because if you do it before they get there, let's say they never move into the room. Let's just say, because, you know. What happens if they come a little bit late and they go straight to the dining room? You can't, that's what muksa means. In other words, just because I'm getting ready. Yeah, no, I'm saying.
So before you go to Shirley, the aunt is on the sofa, they're coming later.
Right. That wouldn't help. And it's if they, when they came, and now you have an item that's sitting on the sofa, and everybody's there, and there's one person standing there, sort of looking at, oh, I need a seat. Now you can move it because you need a seat. Exactly.
You've already touched it. I'm sorry if you had. The orange juice container, the carton, you have to pull the white knob out.
Yes.
I'm told I have to cut the back for the knife. But I'm not sure.
Of that white thing that pop out?
Yes, so I can open up the white thing so I can kill it as a container while it's still full. So I can stab in the back for the orange juice in order to take the white thing out.
Oh, I can tell you. I can tell you what my Rebbe, Steve Berkowitz in Baltimore, does. I was at his house when he opened up a new orange juice, and I saw him take the back of his fork, meaning not the part that you eat with, the pitchfork part, but the back of it, and he put it in the back, and then he used that to lift it up, which is a shinoi, meaning an abnormal way of doing it, where he didn't use his hands; he used the back of a fork. You know, got it through the ring.
Yeah,
to take it out, you know, put it on, I don't have a good example. And then he pulled it out in a funny way, and that's all that he did.
Okay.
So, that's...
What
about
the
top
of the milk?
I threw it out.
What about the top of milk when it's got a binder or something's got a little strip?
Yeah.
Like a soda bottle kind of can?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we're veering way off of muksa right now. So let me just get everything all in order.
I'm sorry, just one thing.
Rabbanan holds it does.
I have Shiva's cell phone. I'll use it if they were to go but it has a place.
Meaning, it's because you're saying you covered both. You would use it, even though it has it, right? If it covered, yeah. If you use it because you've gotten the other category, meaning you've used it, even though it has a designated place, but you've shown and you would use it as a paperweight, then yeah, I would guess.
It's not a toy. I mean, I have a place on the shelf in the playroom.
All right, then I guess that doesn't in the way that he's describing it. That's not really a designated place because you would, you know, I hear what you're saying. It's towing the line of everybody knows where you can find it, so it does have its designated place, but it's not. You would use it for other things. My inclination would be that it would be fine if you would use it for other things, and even though that would override in my mind, to me it would make sense that should override the fact that it has a place, since that was only introduced as a litmus test anyway. That is a suggested way of if you have that place, but if you actually do use it for other things, to me that's much more a significant factor. Right. Right. That would for sure, to me, yeah, that would override it. All right. Wow. Wow. Okay, let's start buses. Let's start Hilchos buses. So we're clearly not going to get... This wasn't even all of it anyway, but we're not going to get through even what we have. Well, let's give it a shot. Let's start it off. Okay, buses also very, very practical. Every week we have this problem. I mean, buses literally means a base. Hebrew word basis is based on, not based on, but similar to the English word base. It means the same thing. The halachic principle goes as follows. Any non-muksa item that is supporting an item or items which aren't muksa, so then that supporting item becomes muksa itself. That is the basic principle of what a bus is. The most classic example is your tray underneath your lachter, underneath your candelabra. If you have a tray under there, the tray, the lachter is muksa, and therefore the tray is muksa underneath it as well. You have money in a dish, you have a cell phone on top of a pillow. Wherever, whatever is supporting the muksa item itself also will become muksa. That's the basic principle. Now, when exactly that kicks into play and how we handle it is we got what to talk about. But that's the principle that if there's something supporting something of muksa, that supporting object becomes muksa as well. Okay, principle number one. In order to become a halachic basis, you must have placed the muksa item there intentionally. It must be that this is here to hold and support the item. So, best way to explain what that means is to say everything that it doesn't mean. So three major categories, really four things that are will exclude the halakha of buses. Number one, the muksa fell onto it. I didn't specifically put it there. Classic case with the cell phone. It fell out of your pocket, Erev Shabbos, landed on the couch, and now, or the couch is about, you're not going to move the couch anyway, landed on a chair, or landed wherever it landed, and now it does that object which is carrying the muksa, is that considered a basis for the muksa objects or not? So the answer is no. Well, let me take one step back before we get into that example. The significance of the fact that it becomes a basis means that now the object which is carrying it also becomes a muksa. So that whatever status the muksa object has gets transferred onto its base, so much so that even if the muksa gets removed, this is now inherently muksa and you couldn't move it either. So let's just take our example which you have money in a dish. You maybe keep it on your dresser, or you keep it on the kitchen cabinet, or on the counter, wherever it is. So that dish becomes muksa. So that even if someone spilled the dish, now the money is not in it anymore, you still can't move the dish because the dish has become just as muksa as the money was. So we'll see there is lots and lots of applications in which this affects us week in and week out. So the ramifications are wide-ranging, but the primary first rule is it has to be that you had put the muksa item there on purpose, that it was intentionally done. If the muksa item fell there, if a phone fell out of your pocket and landed somewhere, that does not make the object a basis. Let's take an example of, you're getting dressed for Shabbos and your cell phone fell out of your weekday clothing and landed on your bed. Happens all the time. So you didn't put the phone on your bed. That's not going to make your pillow or your bed into a basis for the phone and make the whole thing muksa because you didn't place the phone there. It just fell out of your clothes as you were getting dressed for Shabbos. You threw this over there. I didn't even realize it was there until Friday night. So that right away means that's not going to achieve the status of a basis if you didn't put it there on purpose. Number two, again, this is the exception. This is where you will not have a problem. If you intentionally place it there during the week, but you meant to remove it before Shabbos, just that you forgot. You got busy with the other 10,000 things which you need to get done before Shabbos. So it's true that I did put my phone on purpose on Thursday night in the place that I normally put it, over here in my coat pocket, because that's where I like to have it. I did put it there on purpose. A better example, Friday afternoon, I just got back. I put it in there because I wanted it. I was going to go out to a shop. I put it there on purpose. But I knew that I needed this coat over Shabbos. I was thinking, take the phone out of the pocket before Shabbos starts. I just forgot. Now it's Friday night, I need my coat. So now I'm trying to figure out what am I supposed to do, we'll have to deal with the practical details of this. But technically speaking, my entire coat just became a basis for my cell phone. What now happens? Well, your coat did not become a basis for your cell phone because you never meant to leave it there. You had every intention of taking the phone out. You just forgot, even though you put it there on purpose on Friday, but that was with the intention of removing it, and you just never got around to that. So that also will not give it a status of a basis because it wasn't done intentionally. And the third example, which is very similar, is where you know intention when you put it there. It wasn't I was thinking, I want this to be in my coat because my coat's the right place to hold it. And then just put it down. When you walk, where do you put your keys when you walk in the house? I don't know, I just put it here, I put it there. I had no intention whatsoever. I wasn't thinking anything when I did it. That also isn't good enough to create a basis, because you did not do it intentionally, just sort of, without, you know, you no intention of having it there over Shabbos, it just ended up there. Those are all the exceptions in which you will not achieve a status of a basis. Now there's a fourth example, which is similar to the third, but a little bit different, and that's what's categorized as a chance placement. Arai is the word that's used in Aramaic. It's a temporary, the mikra ba'alma just happened to have been there. For example, you're packing things, you're going away for Shabbos, so you pack a suitcase of things, you get there before Shabbos, you put your stuff down, you go to shul, you come back, you open up your suitcase, and there on top is, you name it, your hair dryer, your cell phone, and your pajamas are underneath. You're like, well, how do I get to the stuff that I need? I got all the mukta and stuff on top. Well, technically speaking, all of the things underneath are now supporting your muksa item on top. They've all become a basis. Your pajamas are muksa. So the answer is they're not, because you didn't put the hair dryer on top because you wanted the clothing to hold it. You needed to just pack everything in, and the best way for you to pack and the way that it just fit in is that it this is how it happened. But it wasn't that you intended, like, the dish is there to hold the money. I put the money here because my dish is holding the money, or my wallet is going to hold my money, or my credit card, or my license. That's not what happened when you packed the suitcase. It ended up there. So that's not going to affect the status of everything underneath, giving it the status of a bus. And again, the reason why that's very significant is because even if you, say, kick the stuff off, so now that it's not on it, if it were to have achieved the status of a basis, it's still muksa, even though the item is not on it. The clothing underneath would be muksa for the rest of Shabbos. So if you did pack it in a way that you wanted to protect the hairdryer, so you wrapped it up in something, that might have the status of a basis unless you intended to undo that before Shabbos. Right, that would, then you'd get into category number one, where you put it there on purpose, but you intended to remove it before Shabbos, you just forgot. But if you didn't intend to do that because you didn't think you needed it, whatever you wrapped that up in would then become a basis that even if the hair dry would be removed from it, it still would remain muksa. But similarly, you have things on top of items in a drawer, in a shelf, in a box. If it was only packed away because it just ended up on top, I did not intentionally put it to be there. And again, the reason why this is a fourth category is because you did intentionally put it in the box, you just didn't care that it was on top. It would have been just as fine if it would have been on the bottom. That's just the way that it ended up in. So most poskim would hold that that's not considered a basis, and therefore you can rely on that if you need the things underneath, which is obviously what we're talking about, why it's so relevant. You need the thing on the bottom. You can, once you get the muksa off, so let's talk about how you can do that, then it will be considered okay. Now, I would mention on these examples that I just mentioned, the drawer itself, or the suitcase itself, is a basis. Meaning, you put the hairdryer in the suitcase. You definitely want your hairdryer to stay in there all Shabbos. You're in whatever quarters you're staying for Shabbos. That's where that's its place. So the suitcase itself is carrying the hairdryer, which you want. It's just the clothing that's underneath the hairdryer that I wanted for Shabbos. I didn't mean for that to get swept up. So to move your suitcase around on Shabbos is a problem, because your suitcase does become a basis as a whole. That entity holding your muksa items, which you in every way intended to be there, where in the suitcase I didn't care, but that it should be in the suitcase I obviously want, that's where I'm leaving it. I put it there on purpose. That will create the suitcase into a basis unless you intended to unpack it and just forgot. But generally speaking, and depending on how, you know, everyone's situation, depending on where you're going for Shabbos and whether you did or didn't intend to do that, your drawer, box, suitcase, which you put it in, would become a basis. The leniency here is that the things that are underneath the hair dryer, their clothing, does not become a basis, because that you didn't really care where in the suitcase it's in, and therefore it won't affect the clothing that it's on, but it will affect the suitcase as a whole. Is that clear? Making sense? Yeah.
So let's say you have a suitcase where you went away for Shabbos. I mean, if you can you open and close and that sort of thing, or the whole, or are you just talking about?
Right. No, you would not be able to do that because you can't move something which is muktzah. Right.
If it's sitting in one spot.
Now, the other issue, now the reason why that's it's a good example to get to the idea, but it's going to be a poor example, lemaisa, is because we'll get to in a minute, what happens when it's a basis for something which is both permitted and forbidden at the same time. Like a suitcase. And the reason why the suitcase is a bad example is because anything which you need on Shabbos, which is together with something which is muksa, the fact that you need it on Shabbos always trumps everything else, and makes it more valuable to you, and will determine the status. So the suitcase is really a bad example unless you have nothing else in there other than most of the things. But if you have your pajamas in there, so then the pajamas themselves, even though they're less expensive than the hair dryer, will actually determine the status of the hair dryer more. So it will end up being okay, lemaisa. So that's why suitcase is bad. But the idea behind it is that a drawer or a box is a better example where, you know, that might take over the stat. We'll get to that's going to be a big discussion. Unbelievable. That's just unbelievable. Let me just finish one more thing, and we'll see if we have time for questions, and I'll let Rabbi Pransky take over. The last thing is letter three, if that makes sense. I just wanted to note that when it is permitted to move the buses, meaning I just gave you a whole bunch of examples of where the buses does not take on the halakhic status of a buses. So I just want to make note before we even get any further that that doesn't mean that you can move the muksa off it. The muksa is still muksa. All that we're just a hair dryer is still it's still a muksa. It's a klisha machzel iser. All that we're determining is that once we figure out an appropriate way to get that off, which we'll have to talk about, then the items underneath it do not become muksa. But that doesn't mean that we just want to stress where it is that we're talking. We're just talking about, does the support or the carrier, the item that the muksa object is on, does that become muksa? So under these circumstances where you didn't put it there on purpose, the answer is no, but that doesn't affect the item that we're talking about. The hair dryer, again, is a good thing. What's the status of a hair dryer? The klishim lachdolei eser. It's muksa because its primary use is something forbidden. You could use it for other things. You could certainly use it as a doorstop or as a paperweight. You normally don't. It's a klishim lachdolei. So in any case, if, again, just going through the examples, if you get to your hotel and your pajamas are underneath the hair dryer, so what can you do? You can just move it anyway because it's not muksa. I need its place. It's in my way. It's in my way. It's the same thing as being on the chair that you need to sit in. It's a klishim lachdolei. You're allowed to move it. So you take a deep sigh of relief. You're fine. It's okay. You can get your pajamas out of your suitcase on Friday night. If the suitcase, it depends if the suitcase, but the suitcase most likely is going to have enough mutter products in it that will actually take over the status. In other words, it's going to be. Right, but even if you didn't intend to do that, because there's more than the dryer in the suitcase, the permitted items which you need on Shabbos will trump the status of the hair dryer and give the entire suitcase a status of a basis leheter. We'll talk about that. That's going to be in letter G. We'll get there. Okay, so next week, Mirat Hashem, we'll talk about Hanukkah. 2 weeks, we'll continue our discussion on Hilchos Basis.